Hi, everyone. Before we get into this episode, I feel the need to address the shocking and devastating news that hit us all yesterday, which is that renowned recording engineer Steve Albini has died. I, like many of you, am still in a state of shock. His work was so omnipresent and affected so many people. We even talked about him in this very episode you're about to listen to, which was taped 2 weeks ago. So I'll paraphrase Nico Stratus and say that I have absolutely everything to say and no words all at once. What I will say is that my life wouldn't be what it is without the years that I was profoundly shaped and moved by so much of his body of work. Godspeed, Steve.
Hello, and welcome to Sounding Out with Izzy, the podcast where we have conversations with musicians, music producers, publicists, live promoters, zine makers, journalists, and more about their experiences working in the music industry as women, non-binary, and queer people. I'm your host, Isabel Korp, the founder of the queer femme music-based blog and YouTube channel, A Girl's Two Sound Sense.
Today's episode I am so excited about because we have JL Holzman, the lead singer of self-proclaimed mascara mosh pit rockers Echo Astral, on the pod today. Echo Astral's new record, Pink Balloons, is one of my favorite albums of the year so far. It's an abrasive, catchy, and radically optimistic record that isn't afraid to challenge its listeners to imagine a better future. I love having conversations with people who challenge, enlighten, and instill a new sense of invigoration in me, and JL did not disappoint. And without further ado, let's get right into this episode.
Hi. Hello. Hello, hello.
We're matching backgrounds.
If you could see behind me, you'd see like a giant Barbie mobile and like a Charlie XCX poster is what's on my wall.
Okay, important question. What era of Charlie XCX?
It's the Pop 2 poster that comes with the vinyl.
Big W.
It's the best one until the next one comes out.
Exactly. Wait, which came out first, Number One Angel or Pop 2?
Number One Angel came out first, and that was the thing that was like her first good album, like in my opinion. I mean, I don't know. Like, I like early Charlie for sure, but like Vroom Vroom EP and then On for me is my preferred Charlie consumption. What about you? What's your favorite Charlie XCX record?
I pretty much am in the same lane. I think she was at her peak when she was collaborating with Sophie, for sure.
I think she's done pretty well for herself in the last decade. She's made some of the best art. Fucking rules.
Yes, she has. Have you listened to some of the singles on Brat?
Of course. Who couldn't? I was listening to Von Dutch like all weekend. It's so good.
Yes, it is. Well, JL, welcome to Sounding Out with Izzy. I am excited to have you here. And to just get right into it, you and the band signed to Top Shelf recently, and a lot of influential forces in the industry seem to be really taking notice. You were profiled in Stereo Gum. You were reviewed in Pitchfork. Mark from Spectrum Pulse just reviewed Pink Balloons, and Todd in the Shadows is tweeting about you. Like, how has the whole like new whirlwind of attention affected you so far? How are you like taking it all in at the moment?
So I would say, first of all, it's nice to have people recognize how vital art can be when it's made with the best of intentions. I don't really care about the fact a lot of people are talking about the record. The more people that talk about it, great. Like, I think more people should hear the songs and what we're trying to say on the songs. But I've never really been one interested in fame or infamy. I guess I'd prefer infamy over fame. I come from a background, like, I've spent my whole career before being in music doing journalism, and I have a lot of experience with the media business. If I wanted to be famous, I wouldn't be doing music, and I'm well known for the hard work that I put in to write about climate change and write about energy policy. It's one of my deepest loves. I would say, though, that the thing that's been most striking is how people are picking up on what we're saying without us having to explicitly state, like, this is what this was about. It feels like the music is resonating, which I feel, it feels good to see it in real time.
Yeah, and not having to spell it out, because people are definitely more attuned and plugged in than a lot of people give them credit for. I also understand that, like you mentioned earlier, in your day job, you work as a climate and energy reporter. And when you're constantly staring down some of the most petrifying news imaginable, I imagine, like, that you can, like, feel like you're going a little crazy. So when having this creative pursuit where you're writing this music that's clearly resonating with, like, a lot of the doom and gloom that a lot of Zoomers and are feeling, but also is prioritizing joy, how do you feel like that creates a balance in your life? Do you feel like it creates a necessary balance having the music on top of what you're doing when you're working?
So first of all, I'll just say that I've spoken at this about this at conferences before, even the doom and gloom of climate is itself a failure of the media. Like, I think that those of us in journalism should be trying to be more aware, self-aware, more aware of our how our content, unfortunately that's what the word I'm going to use, content, is experienced by people that consume it. I have myself spent a lot of time trying to educate people on the dangers of doomerism and on the need to believe in a better future. That's something that I talk about at panels on how I cover climate. Because right now we're kind of in this very difficult spiral, a lot of us who spend a lot of our time on our phones, far too many of us. Forgetting about me for a second, like, I do think that there's a power in giving something to help other people balance their lives. It was interesting to hear you say joy just there. Like, one of the reasons I love bands like Idols is that they have centered joy explicitly in what they do and go out of their way to, with intention, like, make people feel better about the world and more able to take on the deepest challenges and hardest conflicts that are in their day-to-day lives. Like, joy is the operative phrase, you know. The world is very hard right now, but if we're just making art that resonates on only that level, then people are just gonna feel like shit all the time. And right now, like, Taylor Swift and Beyonce and Dua Lipa and Ariana Grande are kind of just interested in themselves. And that's fine. But if all the art that we're consuming is interested in the creator and not in the consumer, that's a recipe for a pretty devoid culture, in my opinion.
Well, speaking of art that's interested in the consumer and not just the creator, I understand that when you and the band sat down to brainstorm this album, that you explicitly made it clear that you want
to create something to make people imagine a better future. What does that ideal better future look like in your eyes?
So I love it when people ask about this, because like that's the fucking key. Like, take a figure like our beloved Jo Rowling in the UK, right? Like, what is the world that she created that was so successful and took the world by storm? It was a world where Jews have stereotypical names, as do Asian people, African American people, Black people. Fucking everyone is a stereotype in a Harry Potter book. And itself is a Harry Potter itself is a worldview, right? Like if you think about bad art made by bad people, like what Harry Potter is it is devout toward this like very, very Christian magical realism that is not really centered in like the way human technology is and the way human society is, right? Like the innovations of the world are to be frowned upon. And instead it is this like perfect picturesque romantic thing that people believed a long, long time ago, like in the 1830s, but without the racism or whatever. Like it's very like if that's the approach that you have to art, first and foremost, like it's not about what you're trying to do. It's about what you're not trying to do. The world that we want to make with Echo, like the Pink Balloons world, is one where people kind of recognize that the systems that are propping up their lives were either failing or tainted by failures of the past, right? Because in that recognition and in that enlightenment, there's something empowering. Like there's a beauty in the knowledge that you're being lied to, because that's the first step. Sorry, that was some like very deep, like
I mean, I love the way that you framed it, that being a first step towards seeing the light, I guess, in a way, and not sort of just drowning in your own like cynicism.
I mean, it goes down to simply the world that you want to imagine, right? Like just think of a better future. Like if you just woke up and you thought that things will get better, and you spent every day just thinking of the world you want to see and not this dystopia that is pretty obvious to plenty of us, there's a remarkable thing that happens, right? Like when we made Pink Balloons, I was imagining, just based off of the knowledge that I had because of my day job, because of my own lived experience as a DC resident, because I'm hyper aware of the way the world is and current events, like I could just tell that we were headed towards some spiral of a lavender scare situation and a crisis of democracy situation and fear around bodily autonomy, around agency and discrimination and violence. And so whether intentionally or not, we just dreamed up kind of where we wound up now, like a year ago, like people burning themselves on DC streets and fucking like cultural figures whining about being canceled every fucking day. Like Jerry Seinfeld literally just speaking language from our record in real time on the New Yorker. I don't even, every day it actually astounds me. But that's the thing, right? Like, sorry to get on a tangent, just that's the thing where if you just actually are trying to think ahead, right? Because the people who are trying to fuck with you are thinking ahead. Mm-hmm. If you think ahead every day, use your keys, like actually try to anticipate where things are going in anticipation of and in the hopes of building a better future. Like if that's the end goal, you can get there. That's the way that we approach art.
And it's a proactive way to approach it as well. And not even just art, but I mean, art is a great tool to inspire that and instill that in people. But the minute that you wallow in like the cynicism and be like, okay, you know what? I can never imagine a better future. It's impossible. I give up. Then you lose. There's nowhere to go from there, you know?
And well, yeah, I mean, like, but why art, right? Like, yeah. I spent my whole life building a world for myself around trying to help people through journalism, and journalism is still really powerful, and having an observer role decipher in legitimate terms what matters and what is happening with what matters, like, that is a value that is so sacrosanct and so important that we should be striving to uphold. Like, that the beauty of journalism really matters, but when the systems themselves are captured, right? Like, when people stop trusting whatever pops up on their screens, it becomes much harder for quality information to really penetrate the way people see the world. And we're seeing that in misinformation, disinformation spreading rampantly around everything that we do and consume, whether it be our healthcare, our environment, what have you. But art somehow still is able to feed the stream down. Like, it's like the rocks that build our cities. It's the thing, it's our foundation. Somehow it's just this beautiful human thing. And that's why I spend so much time on it. It's like, if you want to anticipate a better future with art, that's the most powerful thing you can do.
Yeah, especially when it's music, because somehow, like, when you think about, I mean, I guess you could argue that people would make this argument about maybe movies or something, but like, you rarely hear people be like, this painting saved my life tonight, or this film, maybe they might say that about a film, but or they
I disagree. I think absolutely. I mean, I think art itself, there's something unique about what it does to humans, mm-hmm. that makes visual art, audio, these tactile sensations, it is possible. Even food. Like, you can change someone's mind about an entire culture by just giving them food they like from that culture. You can blow people's minds. I don't know. Like, I remember I saw the film Killers of the Flower Moon last year, and I wept afterwards. I stopped looking at myself and my life the same way after I saw that film. I had a breakdown. I like talked to a friend of mine for like an hour and a half outside the theater and couldn't go anywhere. I don't know. I think I don't know. What is it? Is there a piece of art that's shaped you in that way?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, the first time I ever heard Bikini Kill, I wept. Yeah.
Have you ever seen them?
Have I seen them? I was supposed to see them last July, but I broke my ankle and I couldn't go.
I saw them on that tour. They were really good. I'm sorry you couldn't see it.
Yeah. I did see La Tigre, though, at Brooklyn Steel a year later, I believe. And that was fun.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah. I mean, like, aside from Killers of the Flower Moon, like, what's another piece of art that's really transformed your life in that way?
Definitely, like, when I was a kid, there was something about metal music. Like, there's something analogous to classical, I think, in a lot of metal music. It combines the emotionality of the melody with just incredibly impressive technical skill. Like, it's hard to say that a metal band that sounds good is somehow bad at their instrument, but the best metal also affects you in this visceral emotional way. I remember being a teenager and listening to Slipknot and Mastodon and feeling a lot like, you know, I feel like a lot of that music when you're a teenager, whatever taps into that angst is life-changing, right? Like Nirvana, a lot of grunge. Although Soundgarden, my friend Liam in Echo got into an argument over the weekend about whether or not Soundgarden was crap. I think we both agreed at the end. He convinced me Soundgarden was crap. I feel bad for saying it, but it's actually butt rock.
Yeah. What ultimately convinced you that he said was that Soundgarden was on the
we were in a record store after we got into the argument, and there was some like just like riffage playing on the radio on the speaker overhead in the record store. And I turned to Liam and unprompted, and I go, "See this? This is butt rock." And he goes, "Let's Shazam it." And he Shazammed it, and it was Soundgarden. It was like the album that people like the most. And I was like, "All right, I give it to you." But like Black Hole Sun rips and Spoon Man rips. Like, I don't know. There's good Soundgarden. Sorry, total side note, but I guess that's what happens on podcasts. Yeah, I mean, I feel a little afraid of the future sometimes when I see, and I'm sure that you feel the same way, and other people who listen to your podcast feel the same way. Like, when we look and we see the dominant cultural strains that consume us are just like the most cynical garbage, like so clearly a play to just, I don't know, like do streams or sell a bunch of vinyl at Target. It's yeah. Like, I think that it's easy to lose sight of how it can be the other way.
I want to also get into lyrics, like with everything we've been talking about, I imagine that all like gets infused into the types of lyrics you write. While you're writing, are you someone who's like super, super particular about how everything will sound and tie together?
So I'm deeply intentional with the lyrics I write. Every word is in the right place. I am a student of Toni Morrison and Cormac McCarthy. When I was in school, I loved taking like a chapter and spending like 2 weeks dissecting a full chapter and leaving like marks in between each word and deciphering the puzzles within the sentences. My favorite book of all time is Sula, Toni Morrison's second book. And I think you can do that with any of those chapters. You could take one of those chapters, you could study it for a year in a college course, I swear. And so I take that approach to our lyrics. You know, like I love playing with internal rhyme. I like creating double or triple entendre with a word and kind of stacking all of it on top of one another. Like, I'm also a student of Kendrick Lamar. Like, I feel like Kendrick really nails that. The way he writes his lyrics. Yeah, I mean, like, I've a lot of people have been asking me, like, why did you intend that? Why did you intend that? And it actually, like, that I like doing, like, answering the questions, because there is a lot hidden inside of there.
One of the tracks that really stood out to me, even though it was more of like a slower, like, interlude, which I thought was a really great dynamic addition to the album, was Somewhere at the Bottom of the River between L'Enfant and Eastern Market. And I love how that already kind of sounds like La Dispute.
People keep bringing up that it's a La Dispute reference. It's not. No, it's not. Well, it may have been an unintentional reference. So like, we were talking about what to do for that interlude track, and Guinevere spat out that name, and I did not remember that it was a Law Dispute thing, although I may or may, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure Law Dispute referenced something with that title. I'm not sure, like, don't correct me, or please correct me, but for us it was about the location. L'Enfant Plaza and Eastern Market are two different stations in Washington DC, and in between are the monuments and the US Capitol. And so like the image we were always trying to paint was like this very dingy, swampy sewer river that just runs through the city. I didn't realize it was a Law Dispute reference, if it even was, until Pitchfork said it or whoever said it. And I was like, oh yeah, I love Law Dispute. Wildlife is a sick album. Yeah. No. And so that went. But yeah, that poem at the top of Somewhere at the Bottom. So that was written by Ari Drennan, who her current job is doing advocacy work with Media Matters on LGBTQ issues, doing good investigative work. But before that, she did climate stuff at Center for American Progress, which is this other DC liberal think tank. And I met her at the first Society of Environmental Journalists conference I ever went to. I was in the closet and she had just come out and had barely like been with people. And so she was the first trans friend I ever made. And we hung out and I went to my first ever gay bar in the middle of this like empty, I think we were in Fort Collins, Colorado. There was no one in this gay bar. It was me, it was Ari, and then it were these two other climate reporters. I think it was Jimmy Tobias, and it was someone else. And we go there and we hang out. And then she and I didn't talk. Like, and the history of our friendship is one where like I myself denied who I was. And as a part of that, I didn't ever want to make trans friends. So like Ari and I didn't talk for like another 6 months ish. And then the lockdown started. I started having my big old gender sex freak out. And she was one of the first people I told. And I was like, hey, I'm sorry that I was a fucking asshole, but you're one of the coolest people that I've ever had the chance to meet. Can you help me? And that was the start of our friendship. And now we text like every week. And like, I would kill someone for her. Like, I fucking would trust her with my life. And we don't even spend that much time together, but she really is one of the greatest people I've ever met. Endless compassion and empathy for everyone. And so when we were making the record, I wanted to thank her for everything that she had done for me. And so I was like, hey, you have this incredible poetry. You know, you just wrote it for fun. Can I take one of your poems and make them one of our songs? And she said, of course, not really knowing what it would be. And we tried it out with different things, ultimately settling on, I'm just going to read the darn thing. And then we're going to make it kind of creepy. And then Jeremy Snyder, our producer, also performs in the band Pure Adult.
Yes.
Yeah.
I adore his work. He also does like front of house sound for Idols, doesn't he?
He works with Idols. He works with Gillivan. He works with Fontaines. He works
insane.
With a bunch of different Tuareg bands. Yeah. I mean, Jeremy's amazing. Jeremy's the best. You can't stop us from working with Jeremy. But anyway, I could go on about Jeremy forever. I want to finish the story for your dear listeners. Long story short, we put together the song. Jeremy put together the instrumental, that like clanking thing, the synth, like the eeriness of it all. That was all him. And he orchestrated it. And then, yeah, I mean, the conversation at the end is with my grandfather who before he passed away last year. And it was just like, I felt like, if there's a way for us to put together a scene in this record after people had a bunch of jams where it just freaks them out, like, and makes them think about the world differently, then maybe that's a service.
Yeah. And I mean, speaking of art that makes you weep, like when I found out the context of that conversation, I had just been listening to this album shortly after my grandfather passed.
And I'm sorry to hear that.
And so it's all right. You know, my family, I think, especially my parents, they have been incredibly great helping out my Nana sort out all of her assets and stuff like that. Cause like, especially like when you lose a spouse and like, you're in the position of being like, okay. Cause like in the time that they were living in, like he was a bookkeeper. So he handled all the financial stuff and she has like no clue. So like it's really great that she has a great support system around her. I just went to visit her last week. And long story short, it's all right. It'll ultimately like be fine. He lived as like a really great, happy life. And this whole tangent of mine's going to get cut. But anyway.
Oh, be vulnerable.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
No, because I'll be vulnerable with you. I mean, yeah. I mean, I've lost all my grandparents. You know, the reason I wanted to include that audio on the record is because, you know, I always hear that people don't understand my lived experience. Like, it's always like fucking like, oh, I'm sorry you're dealing with that bullshit. But people can relate to all of it if you put it in the context of like, oh, like someone you love is going to die eventually.
Yeah.
And like, we're used to old people aging out and then passing away. But it's a universal experience. Like, no human can avoid like that. And then what happens after that, right? Like, every death is 1,000 dominoes falling.
Yeah.
People who are impacted and lives that are changed forever, and any death that can be avoided should be avoided.
And like, especially like the way that the after effects like are handled, just like in like your surrounding environments in general. I think just because like death still makes everybody like collectively so uncomfortable, like the resistance to even like addressing it like whatsoever, even like addressing like the idea of getting old, because like there's a lot of like people who age and they age and they age to the point where they can no longer take care of themselves, and sometimes people get neglected because people are too like uncomfortable with the idea of the fact that of them getting older and losing control of themselves. Like, it's really sad, like, and pretty like morbid when you think about it.
Sure. I mean, I when I was younger, fuck, like 21, 22, I lost both of my grandmothers and my closest family member outside of my actual parents, my uncle, within the span of like 6 weeks, like all of them. And I like called it my funeral tour. And I like went back and forth from Michigan to DC to Michigan to fucking California. And like, death will drain you and destroy you. But there's this beautiful thing that happens at funerals that you've probably become familiar with too, where like everyone knows what it's like when they've been through it. No one knows what it's like until they go through it. And then all of a sudden, everyone knows exactly what you're talking about. And that's part of you getting older and maturing, is going through that experience. But it's also like just a fucking reality that just empathy and being with people in the same room, that is how you can change things. Like, you know, I think often about the consequences of, like, because this is a part of what Echo does, like talking about the plight of people who are in danger in our country. Like, I think often about the plight of people who, by no virtue of their own accord, but like literally because some people wanted to have a laugh, like, are gonna die. Like, whether it be immigrants, whether it be trans people, whether it be like fucking anybody. And that's that empathy, right? Like, would you do this to your grandfather? Would you do this to your brother? Would you do this to your sister? Like, is this how we want the world to be? Or can we learn something from the human experiences that bind us?
Yeah. And part of Ari's poem that I'll never forget, a few specific lines were, I can see you shifting in your seat. I can feel you getting bored of me. And I have friends still hiding while you throw a parade. Like, I'll never forget those specific stanzas or couplets of the poem, like the way you deliver them.
The line to me that is most important in that poem is the gravestones of strangers. Like, and I'm actually surprised no one has picked up that that's a reference to trans people, that like people dying underneath names that are not their own. Like, yeah, I the longer all this drags on, like, I did not know that the record would come out and it would be the world that we had predicted so closely aligned with the release of the record. Like, it has been eerie as fuck and a reminder of the stakes in where we're at right now. But putting all that aside, there's just a totality of human suffering that it goes through the lives of every person. And no matter what specific experience I go through or you go through, like, I think it's actually really sick that you and I just had a moment here and talked about like our grandparents dying, because that's something everyone goes through. So yeah, thank you for sharing, by the way.
And thank you for sharing and being vulnerable as well. Cause I mean, like, it felt like such a, like a, I don't know if you're someone who believes in quote unquote synchronicity, like that's like kind of a buzzword now, but like it did feel like very synchronistic, like right after like having this stage like happen, losing my grandfather, having like listening to you speaking to your grandfather in real time about getting older. Like it was a very profound and like it was a very like touching moment, like for me to have like with art. So thank you for that.
Appreciate that. Remember when I had said like you can actually change people with art? It's important. I mean, yeah, I like there was a blogger in Australia recently who pointed this out, and once again, like I did not call any of this. Like they directly compared the line on brand about waxing nostalgia about racism to Taylor Swift's line on "I Hate It Here." About
the 1830s without all the racism.
Yeah. And like I, you know, and like I literally wrote a line in Buffaloed about fucking Beyonce like making liberal resistance bait and just profiting off that. And like I don't know. I feel like a lot of this was possible to call. I think we all were distracted after the lockdown. It was easy to like lose ourselves in regaining freedoms and regaining liberty and getting to run around and go to festivals and have sex and party and whatever. But like after the high died down, it does feel like we've kind of been left with something a little bit emptier. And I don't know. I feel like each of us is on some sort of personal growth path to finding out what new role there is for us in that world and how we can try to stop it from being so empty and lonely.
Right. And when you, I feel like the most you can do, honestly, is knowing what you can control, you know, and having faith in the fact that what you can control is enough, at least because, like, I feel like a lot of us can often get caught up in the quicksand spiral of being like, oh, this is, I want this, I want that, I want that, I want this to be better, and then, like, and sort of overworking yourself, you know? But I think, like, accepting what you can and can't do is like an important stage in that growth process.
Yeah. There's a situation right now around like, do we look at the world around us and retreat? Or do we be pragmatic? People don't like to hear pragmatism in a world where they're not getting fucking scraps, right? Like, but I actually don't have an opinion on like how to resolve that conflict, because I personally don't know enough, and it's honestly not my place to say. Like, no matter how I'm going to lose out in a world where technology is used against anyone with a vulnerability and like access to medical care and like a safe living environment is decided by like fucking people with views that don't believe I should exist, you know, I think it's not my place to say what the ultimate bargain worth making is, because that shouldn't be one person's right in the first place, I guess. Like, I think there's so much on the line. Like, like one thing I would love to talk about if we still have time is, yeah, like how did you feel about the record when you stepped away from it? Because like I personally like went, I've spent 2 years on this album at this point, almost from like when I first started working on I-90 to like tracking, going through everything, it's been almost 2 years now, and I've lost all sense of relevance to like how it impacts people. Mm-hmm. But like, how did you feel when you heard it, Pink Balloons?
Well, first I thought, you know what, this kind of feels like when you watch a movie and it's so densely layered with so many significant points of messaging that you feel like this is going to get even better with repeat listens, because there's going to be more that's revealed. There's going to be more that you'll notice, oh my God, that is genius. I didn't pick up on that the first listen. And then like, and it helps that they're like, and it helps also that they, that every song rips as well. That was my takeaway when I stepped away from it.
Well, the songs are good. That's good to know. I would hate it if the songs were bad. But I hope that it's able to, I hope that the messages that we have resonate with people. Like, I hope that this inspires people. Like, I hope somewhere out there, someone hears the record and decides to make something equally as passionate about making the world better. And it does that and does that and does that. Like, that's, I hope that the signal goes out there and inspires more people. That's my only aspiration. Yeah.
Well, who would you say was the person or force that did that for you in that way that inspired you?
Probably two figures were huge for me. Like, Sophie was really important to me from a creative perspective, but also just as somebody who unabashedly was who they were, courageously so. And the way that the art and the self mixed, that was truly groundbreaking for me. And in that same fashion, what was huge for me, and I don't know if she remembers this, but Hunter Hunt Hedrix, the lead singer of the band Liturgy, when I first started transitioning, like, I sent her the stupidest message. It was like, hey, like, I'm going through this fucking mess, but your music has inspired me forever. Blah, 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 blah. Like, I hope you know that, like, I want to be like you. And like, da, da, da. It was like, I came out like shortly after Hunter did. And like, she actually took the time to reply and was like, hey, like, I don't know if you are who you say you are, some reporter in DC, whatever, but like, just know that like, you're gonna do this and you're gonna make it, and like, maybe one day we'll see each other at a gig or whatever. And like, I don't know, sonically, thematically, Liturgy has always been really important to me, and I would say that was something really important in how it inspired me. Like, it was a signal that made me believe that I could do it. And now we're here and I'm talking on podcasts, and yeah. Is there a way that I can just like make a random plug?
Yeah. What do you want to plug?
Yeah. I would like to plug the show, Tim and Eric. Awesome show. Great. It's off the air now, but if you haven't seen Tim and Eric, go watch Tim and Eric. Awesome show. Great job. Great show. 10 out of 10.
Nice. I will definitely be checking it out later.
You've never seen Tim and Eric?
I've heard of it. Yeah. What? But I've never seen it.
Okay. Wow. Okay. We're going to have to do another one of these
where I watch Tim and Eric and we debrief. I would totally be down.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. No, but like with the full band, like the whole band needs to be there, or at least Liam and I and Miriam. Yeah, that needs to happen. Great.
Nice.
Good to know. The sequel.
American Comedy. Heidegger. And yeah. Yeah, I'm familiar, but I never went down the rabbit hole.
Wow. Do you ever watch I Think You Should Leave?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Eric Andre?
Mm-hmm. Eric Andre, okay,
so,
yes.
So the same blend of shows, you know, good stoner humor, weird, quirky. Anyway, Tim and Eric's the OG. Love Tim and Eric. Yeah. Anyway, sorry for that random tangent. I felt like it got kind of intense there.
No, that's beautiful. I love that. I feel like that's definitely like maybe the like the 100th time I've talked to somebody and they have said the same thing about Sophie. And it just goes to show just like what an incredible, like, talk about like manifesting a better future. Like, yeah. She did that.
Yeah, she did. So much so that she got a pretty lukewarm Annie Clark reference out of it.
Pretty good. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, like, are you a person who listens to St. Vincent like that?
I would say St. Vincent is even an influence on Echo. Like, there are a couple of records that are etched into my brain from her, but I do think that she's one of many who is making art with a large platform, who seems to be creatively divorced from the real struggles of ordinary people. And that's not something that I say lightly. It's something that I say about someone who dances on fancy art tables at fucking museums. Like, that's what I'm saying it about. Yeah, I mean, when I was in college one summer, I accidentally like stood outside in line in the sweltering heat in New York trying to see a free St. Vincent concert, and then ultimately bailed because my dad was tired of standing. Like, I really fuck with St. Vincent's music, but like a lot of artists these days, it just, I don't know, feels like they lost a little bit of touch. It's okay, you'll get it back, Annie. You'll get it back. She's not listening to this, but if someone knows her,
she means well.
Pass the message along.
Yeah, Strange Mercy is my favorite St. Vincent album. If I had to choose,
I mean even the one that she did with David Byrne, the all horns record. Mm-hmm. It's weird. It's quirky. It's only a couple good songs on it, but like they made a whole horns album. Like. You gotta respect the hustle. That's why I like the Metallica Lou Reed album a lot.
Yeah, because it's, Lulu.
Because it's like, it's such a, you gotta respect the creativity and the hustle. Like, they walked into that room knowing they might make a stinker, and they went for it anyway. And you gotta respect it.
Yeah, like that's like how I feel about their documentary. Was it Some Kind of Monster? Is that what it's called?
Oh, I haven't seen it, but I heard it's really entertaining.
I mean, it's entertaining, yeah, like people clown on it, but it's such low-hanging fruit. Like, it's like people saying Nickelback sucks today. It's the lowest hanging fruit to clown on Metallica going to therapy together. Like, at least they went to therapy, you know?
I mean, I love Metallica. I don't think that any music they've put on the last 15 years is worth listening to. And that's why I still love them, like, so much.
Yeah.
Go Metallica.
If I may, I would like to ask you a little bit more about working with Jeremy Snyder. Like, what were some of the biggest highlights in the studio with him?
Love getting asked the question, what was Jeremy Snyder like? Anyone who works with Jeremy knows that he is one of the most entertaining and precise people to work with in a studio, like, ever. Because he's somebody who can hang. Like, that's the thing that matters most when you're in a room like that, is like, can you make good art and also have a good time doing it? It's so easy to make the art, but if you're not having a good time, it impacts the quality of the art. It just does. He just has the most brilliant left field ideas. Jeremy has rules about what he'll make. Like, he uses the full take. He's like Albini in that way. Like, he does not edit your take. He hates gang vocals. We had gang vocals taken off the record multiple times. We had gang vocals on Buffaloed. We had gang vocals on Devorah. He took all the gang vocals out, and we were like, please, just a little bit. And he said, you can put gang vocals there. I will tell you it sounds like crap, no matter what we do. And so we didn't put any gang vocals in there. Essentially, the rule about Jeremy Snyder is, if it's even a little bit pop, no, it's not going that direction. But what's awesome is, creatively, we have the same reference points. So, like, he's worked with a lot of these bands. I've revered not just those bands, but the worlds they come from and their own influences for a long time. And so I could just say, you know, I want the drums to sound like that. And he'd be like, okay. And I wouldn't need to explain or show, like, oh, this is the sound, whatever. No, like, Jeremy just knows. I don't even have to. And he also, he has a rule that you don't say any band that's ever recorded music while you're in the studio. Jeremy doesn't want to hear a single other band name. You can talk about sounds, you can describe them, whatever, but I think that's what makes him so special, is that he's so dead set on making something no one else has made before. Jeremy Snyder, 10 out of 10. Strong. 100%. Love Jeremy.
Yeah. How was that show that you guys played together in DC recently?
It's kick ass. You know, I got Jeremy Snyder to wear some fucking sick Marxist shirt and shout "From the River to the Sea, Free Palestine," like in a room full of like DC people. Like, I know Jeremy was happy about getting to do that as well as I was seeing it. Yeah, I mean, if to actually do a real plug, like if you haven't been to an Echo show, and this isn't a promotion of me, this is just like a thing that is PSA, like you have an opportunity to see something no one else is doing. Like I'm proud of the shows that we build because they are so intentionally all-inclusive ragers. Like, you know, I know that we go out of our way to make the pits safe, to make the crowds safe, to use the space as not just one for enjoyment, but also contemplation and reflection. And like the Black Hat show was certainly like that. Yeah, I don't want to spoil what we do, but like the Black Hat show was the start of us pulling a lot of wild cards. And now like our live show, I don't know. I'm really proud of it. Like, I'm excited to go on the road with Idols. I'm excited to go on the road with Ted Leo in June. Like, I'm excited for all the other shows that we have planned that I'm not allowed to talk about yet one day. But yeah, I mean, I the DC music scene is unrivaled. Like, I mean, I love playing shows, but DC is really special.
Yeah, it is. And there's so much rich history there with regards to just like punks imagining a better future.
Yeah, I would agree. I do think that there's a difference between each band. We get compared a lot to Priest, and I liked Priest's music, but I don't think that we're anything like Priest's, and I think that comparison sometimes is a little confusing. Even Fugazi, like, I mean, it's just bands with the same genre tags, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. I think it's certainly a history worth respecting that we acknowledge and we're proud of being a part of, but I do think it's worth not lumping everyone in the DC scene together. There's great pop from DC, RT Strange is from DC, there's great rap from DC, Rico mm-hmm. Nasty and Pusha T are from this area. Wale, Goldlink, although people don't like Goldlink right now. Like, the area has a lot to offer, a rich history beyond just the genre of music we need to.
Yeah. Definitely. And so my last question, I'm going to leave all the space for you to plug whatever you want, and anything the rest of the year has in store for you, feel free to shout it out.
Certainly. Yeah. Just like if you live in Miami, Orlando, New Orleans, DC, New Jersey, Philly, New York, Boston, we're playing shows there in June. We put a record out. It's good. Really though, if you're not standing up for people in your life who are afraid and might have their lives changed negatively over the course of the following months and years due to things that are completely within your control, if you just step up and use your voice, then like, just go fucking do that. Like, what are you doing? Like, you're listening to this podcast instead of just it's so easy. That's my actual plug. Anyway.
Yeah. Free Palestine.
You said it.
Well, JL, thank you so much for being so generous with your time and being willing to open up so generously and for shooting the shit about comedy with me as well.
Take care, friend. It was great to chat.
Thank you so much for listening to Sounding Out with Izzy, and thank you again to JL from Echo Astral for joining me today. Remember to subscribe and sign up for the mailing list on my YouTube channel and written blog, both under the name A Girl's Two Sound Sense. Give the podcast a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening, and I will catch you in the next episode of Sounding Out with Izzy.